I'm going to talk about the health needs and experiences of the LGBT community in New Jersey. There are 9 million people in the U.S., according to the Williams Institute, who identify as LGBT. And that's approximately the same size as the population of New Jersey itself. In New Jersey, 4% of people self-identified as LGBT, and that's around 360,000 people. So at one point, our school decided to reassess their health curricula on LGBT topics, health topics. So what we found in New Jersey that there has been never been a health needs assessment for that population. So even though it was just foundational work, we decided to go and start with a health needs assessment for the LGBT community in New Jersey. So that's our objective up there. We wanted to see what the health needs were, and we also wanted to explore the encounter between the healthcare providers and the LGBT population in New Jersey to better inform our curricula. So we used a mixed method design. We started with group interviews, so qualitative, and then we followed it by a quantitative survey type of the needs assessment, which was more descriptive and cross-sectional. So we did group interviews. There were 40 participants. We did offer them incentives. And then we did thematic analysis in Vivo 10. So I'm just going to jump right into the themes that we identified, you know, just in the interest of time. So if you see up there, the major themes that we identified based on our talks with people, and we wanted them to do, is to talk about their healthcare encounter. So it was mostly people talking to each other about what they encountered once they were seeking some kind of help, medical help. So the first thing that popped or emerged was that there was a perception of discrimination and bias in providers' attitudes. And people then broke them down, and they felt that it was associated with their sexual orientation, gender identity. They felt that the discrimination and the bias was due to the diagnosis that they had. There was also stereotyping. So people conflated race, socioeconomic status with their LGBT status. And there was also, you know, between race, socioeconomic status, and then when you layer it with sexual orientation and gender identity, it became more complex. Then there was also access to care, health insurance access, even though the Affordable Care Act has expanded. There was a major theme that emerged. Now, what we found that all of that experience influences the quality of care. So the bottom line is all of the perceptions, they influence patient-provider communication, patient-provider relationship, the provider's knowledge of LGBT health issues, care environment starts with the staff, you know, the front desk, the environment in the office, procedures and processes, by which we mean the intake forms, you know, the health history forms and those types of things. Physical environment, is it inviting? Was there any signs that, you know, they're inclusive of LGBT populations? Privacy and confidentiality was also big. Everything was influenced by, you know, and then of course there was affordability of care. So here are some sample quotes, and when people were talking, the first one up there is that the previous physician, I intuitively felt that this doctor was afraid to touch me because of my sexuality. So here is where sexual orientation comes in, and people were, you know, the provider, the participant felt that the provider was afraid to touch him. In the second one, there's a transgender patient who said that he this was somebody who was transitioning and wanted to get a pap smear, and he said, no, I do not need to get a pap smear because I'm not at risk for anything. That also points to the lack of education or the gap in education that the healthcare provider, between the healthcare provider and the need of the transgender patient. So that the last one up there is when I told her that I was HIV positive, she made up excuses why she couldn't treat me. So that's a quote that's exemplifying the diagnosis and how people were, you know, providers were biased or they felt perceived discrimination based on their diagnosis. Now there's one up there, but I feel I bring up different things specific to gay men's health. I feel like I'm more educated than he is, and he doesn't know and doesn't see that I don't think. So people were actually trying to educate their healthcare provider in terms of what they needed to be done. You know, so there was again this gap in knowledge of the provider. Then there's this bisexual participant who says that I always felt that he wasn't very knowledgeable. So he would actually go tell him what medications he needed to be on and, you know, trying to educate the provider. Then there's another quote around there that says, I'm really stressed. Confidentiality, you know, my business is my business. And I'd like to keep it that way. And I don't have it up there, but the transgender population, the quotes from them were even more poignant, but they were longer, so I had to exclude them. Where, you know, they don't even, the curtain that you pull across doesn't mean that there's a wall between you. So anything that the provider yells out there to the rest of the staff, the patient can clearly hear all that stuff. And that made the patient very uncomfortable with the way that the providers were talking to each other about the patient just behind a curtain and those kinds of privacy and confidentiality issues. Another thing that comes up again and again is that if you don't close the door in a private consultation, there are people in the waiting room who may hear the exchange. And if you live in a small community and you're not out to those people, sometimes that information, which you want to keep private and confidential, can leak out to your immediate community. So people had concerns about confidentiality. So this is kind of like what we came up with. The first one there, you know, those are the experiences in the healthcare setting. Like I said, there were several different things. Of course, in processes and procedures, there was a lot of stuff about intake forms and health history forms. It starts with the little box that people check. So gender binary doesn't work anymore, and people were very, very vocal about that. There were other things about not just being LGBT. This is how you define yourself. So maybe, you know, including something that would let them self-identify what they want to do and how they want to, you know, present themselves to the provider can be helpful as well. But what we found was that all of those experiences, they perpetuate a perception of discrimination and a lack of trust between the provider and the patient. And then it influences everything that comes, you know, the communication, people are afraid to come out, people are afraid to disclose, the relationship is affected, communication is affected, patient satisfaction becomes low, the overall health experience is rated poorly. And health-seeking behavior, people try to avoid seeking help because of those experiences. So what can we do in terms of curricula, in terms of training our providers, is that providers need to be culturally competent and sensitive to LGBT health, possess the adequate knowledge required to treat those patients, facilitate access to and exchange information on the providers and the services that they provide. So there was this complete mismatch. People didn't know where to go for what. And then there was, they have to be advocates for better health insurance coverage. So not just that, but become advocates as well. So phase two was more of a survey type of an instrument that we, you know, we looked at different instruments out there, several different needs assessments that have been conducted in the country, the Fenway Institute, we looked at the transgender, you know, the survey out there, several different kinds of incorporated questions. Our conceptual framework was, it was mostly driven by the social determinants of health framework. So we posted on Craigslist. Craigslist was our biggest recruiter. So we got, you know, calculated a sample and all that, and then we proceeded. So I'm just going to jump to the conclusions, or the results and findings. So 438 surveys were, the complete surveys were, you know, came back to us. Of those, 32% were lesbians, 26% gay men, 28% bisexual people, and 7.3% identified as transgender. But 5.7, almost 6%, said that they were queer, asexual, fluid, pansexual, several different things which we had allowed them to fill in the box and tell us what they wanted. In terms of race and ethnicity, our sample was predominantly white. But if you look at the demographics of New Jersey, this is kind of like the same breakdown. So New Jersey itself is, you know, 56%, almost the same kind of demographics. 70% were non-Hispanic, 13% were Hispanic. Age representation, most of our participants, 29%, that was our largest, and those were under 25. What we felt were not enough were the over 65 age group. So 2.3% of the sample was over 65, which we felt was a limitation because we were recruiting online. People may not have access, may have limited access to the internet. People may just not want to go to those websites that we were advertising on. So in terms of you know, reasons, responses to I'm out to my family, friends, healthcare providers. Healthcare providers was kind of low. If you look at reasons for not being out, awkwardness and discrimination were high for healthcare providers. Health insurance, 13% of our sample said that they did not have adequate health insurance. So of our sample, 33% of the gay individuals reported no health insurance. Now this is interesting, it's a lot of, there's a lot of stuff up there, but the most important one is the 54.4%, which says that people, because of fear that medical personnel, let me put my glasses on, fear that if medical personnel find out an individual is LGBT, they will treat them differently, and that was a huge barrier to seeking care. Then the second one is lack of personal finances. Those two were the most important ones that were perceived barriers to seeking health care. Mental health care, there was also a need for that. People felt that there was a lack of social support groups, there were no mental health services, and they were not well advertised. People did not know where to find any kind of help. The highest people, the number that reported those barriers were transgender and Asian respondents. These are a list of the common health issues, and among, because we were doing it for our health curricula, we talked about everything. So we also asked them about blood pressure, obesity, everything. So this is a list of all the general health requirement needs that they were identified. So this gives you a graphic type of representation of the same. So what can we do to help? Even though, you know, there is more inclusion of LGBT data, and it's required by the Affordable Care Act now that you incorporate those into the EHR and all those, you know, intake forms, there needs to be more. Especially in New Jersey, we did not find any data in New Jersey, so that was a little scary and pathetic. Insurance, even though Medicaid has been expanded, they were still identified as a great need for more health insurance. People have out-of-pocket expenses which may not be covered by insurance, so that was another issue. Barriers, cultural competency training needs to be incorporated, and mental health illness, especially for minority populations, like I said, Asian populations identified that as a huge barrier. I'm good.
Thank you so much.
Okay.
Questions. We have a couple minutes, so anyone can please feel free to step forward and step right on up to the mic. While you're all thinking, I'll go ahead and kick us off. So I was curious, out of all the needs that you identified in terms of really doing a needs assessment, what would you say from the qualitative data that you saw in terms of prioritizing those needs and thinking about future interventions or implementation?
The one thing that we identified as a, you know, as a trainer of healthcare professionals, we have two medical schools, nursing school, healthcare-related professional school. We have several schools in our the same biomedical sciences program, and we found that I guess their health culture, their cultural competency training needs to be reassessed and reevaluated. And you know, with the students going forward, maybe different. We need to bring back those providers who are practicing out there and try to get their competency up to, you know, because those are the ones which was an indirect assessment of the practice that they were providing. So I think cultural competency around LGBT health, knowledge about LGBT health among the providers is very, very important. And being a state university, I think the state should invest some money trying to promote programs that do just that.
Other questions? Yeah.
Incorporate new, I think that's not a great excuse to reevaluate the curriculum. So you don't need to take anything out of the curriculum in order to incorporate more. What you need to do is make it, I would suggest, make it interactive so that, you know, you have maybe case studies, your groups, case-based type of education, problem-based learning, those kinds, you can bring those patients in. An LGBT person can be hypertensive and diabetic. So, you know, it's not like you have a new case, you just throw in that level and, you know, you bring something new to the table. So it's not that liberating.
Other question? Yeah.
I have a thought or a comment related to these two things, which is that I think there's also this challenge where for queer and trans people who want to become healthcare providers, there are a lot of barriers to getting into school, let alone paying for it, getting through it, making decisions about whether to be out to your classmates. So I think there's sort of we need to have a dual aim of improving training for providers, but also training accessibility to those programs, because there are so many people in our community who are acting as advocates for their friends who are patients, but those people might have the capacity to become healthcare professionals if they just felt more confident they could find a program that would respect their experience, respect their expertise. And then I think there's this other piece of how do we encourage queer and trans folks who are already in the program to stay in primary care, rather than choosing other specialties which might pull them to places where they maybe don't feel as connected to LGBT health as a core of their practice.
Absolutely, I can agree with you completely. Yes, there is, I don't know how many, but yes, there are very few providers who are, you know, trans or LGBT, and, you know, it's hard. And literature suggests that, yes, they have trouble coming out to their, the faculty, say, for example, and the rest of the, your student population. So, yes, I believe that it should be addressed and opened up. Yeah.